Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, June 10th, 2026. Today on the front page are two large pictures. The top one shows a jubilant baseball team, and the heading is Players on the St. Joseph Ogden Baseball Team Celebrate with the Class 2A Super Sectional Plaque the Spartans captured Tuesday night after a 9-0 victory against Williamsville at Claude Crassick Field on the Lincoln Land University campus in Springfield, which is back in the state tournament for the first time since 2017. And they'll face Ottawa Marquette at 7 p.m. on Friday in a state semifinal game at the Illinois Field in Champaign. And the second picture on the front page is an article by Bob Asmussen, and the picture shows Brinley Allen of Armstrong, one of the top competitors in this week's Illinois High School Rodeo Association state event at Gordyville, USA in Gifford. And it has a title of Roping in a New Location, and we'll start with that article. Gordyville, USA to host its first prep rodeo event, the annual state championship. From Gifford, eager to watch some steer wrestling? Can't get enough of goat tying or barrel racing? Well, Mitch Allen has the event for you, and it is in the neighborhood. Armstrong resident Allen is president of the Illinois High School Rodeo Association, founded in 1975. From Thursday to Saturday, the organization is hosting its annual state meet. The top 15 competitors in each of 8 disciplines will vie for top 4 finishes and spots in the National High School Rodeo, which is scheduled for July at Lincoln, Nebraska. The rodeo will be televised on the Cowboy Channel. Gordyville, USA, where Allen has competed in professional rodeos, has never hosted the state event until now. When he became president, Allen pushed to move the event to Gordyville, which has room for up to 4,000 spectators. My grandpa used to take me there when I was a kid, the 44-year-old Allen said. I always thought it would be so cool to rodeo there. Then I got the opportunity to. After taking over as High School Rodeo Association president, Allen went to officials at Gordyville and Gifford and spelled out his plans. He considered it a natural step. It's such a great ag community, and you get so much support, Allen said. It's one of the premier equine facilities in the Midwest. The potential for rain this week makes the decision look even better. The competitors and fans won't be bothered by any rain at the indoor venue. In the past, the event had moved from community to community, Altamont for a bit, and Springfield. Allen State started working on the move to Gordyville last June. By August 1st, it was a done deal. It has taken every bit of a year to plan the first one, Allen said. Now that the venue is being used, Allen hopes to become the annual state finals destination. As long as I'm president, I'm hoping I'll always have it at Gordyville, he said. There's a practical side. It's literally 10 minutes from my house, Allen said. Tickets for the rodeo are $20 per session, with kids under 12 admitted free. We're hoping to get at least 500 people through the door on Thursday night and 1,000 Friday, and hopefully 2,000 on Saturday, Allen said. Saturday night's rodeo will be followed by a party with a live band, Colton Taylor Music. Last memories. The goal was simple. I wanted to create something the kids will never forget, Allen said. This is their high school state finals. Some of these kids, this is all they do, is rodeo. There are full college scholarships available at the top for performers, no different than in basketball, football, or volleyball. These college scouts are looking for their rodeo teams, Allen said. 5 seniors from the organization have earned scholarships for the next year, with other sophomores and juniors being recruited. It's an incredible experience for them, Allen said. There were 8 rodeo weekends during the school year, 4 in the fall and 4 in the spring. Having 15 qualifiers might sound like a big number until you consider that there are 65 to 70 competing in events statewide. Only the best of the best advance. Family fun. Allen, who owns a trucking business, is locked into rodeo. So is wife Kristen and their kids Brinley, who's 16, and Steele, 14. I still rope with the kids every night at home, Alan said. Mitch still competes in rodeo, just not as much as I want to, he said. I'm a has-been, and I'm really looking forward to my kids' future in it. Brinley competes in breakaway ropes and team ropes. Brinley and teammate Ainsley Marin rank among the top two in the state. Brinley was the state champion breakaway roper as a freshman. They're very competitive, and they're very good friends, Alan said. Brinley attends classes at First Baptist in Danville, where she plays basketball and volleyball. She'll be able to get a scholarship at rodeo, Alan said. She's good enough for that. The number one thing you've got to be in rodeo is an athlete. Competing in college is the goal for Marin, a student at Armstrong High School. The daughter of Mike and Brandy Marin, Ainsley, has been around horses since I was real little. She first tried rodeo at age 12, the summer between 6th and 7th grade. Her dad, Mike, made the state finals his senior year. Mike is pushing 50. Now, 15, Ainsley's rodeo career gained a boost when she got a new horse named Ruby. She took me to a whole nother level, Ainsley said. Going to the state finals, Ainsley leads the breakaway event. She has improved her rodeo game with training from Wisconsin-based Jess Hume. He has changed my roping, Ainsley said. With the competition a few days away, Ainsley is ready to get at it. It's definitely challenging, she said. Some days you want to quit, and some days you're on the top of the world, and I love that feeling. Continuing on the front page, an article from Savoy with the heading, Supportive Public PACs Hearing About Nursing Home. About the cottages of Savoy. State Senator Faraci says he's secured $1 million for the project. When John Ponthy first heard about Champaign County's shortage of skilled nursing beds, which is estimated to be about 310, advocates say he didn't believe it. That can't be the numbers, the CEO of FAPROP LLC and owner of the Southern Administrative Services told a colleague after getting off the phone with local grassroots organization advocates for aging care. However, Ponthy learned that the statistic wasn't an exaggeration, which was one of the reasons he decided to join forces with the local group to develop a new skilled nursing facility in Savoy. I've never seen a metropolitan area with such few nursing homes, and, if I may, all one-star nursing homes, he said. This project is as needed as anything I have ever seen in my professional career. Ponthy was one of more than 25 people who voiced their support for the project at a public hearing on Tuesday afternoon. The session, hosted by staff from the Illinois Health Facilities and Services Review Board at the Savoy Municipal Building, was well attended, with about 50 people crammed into the village boardroom and about 30 more watching from the lobby. Those who spoke came from a mix of sectors, including local government officials, healthcare professionals, education stakeholders, state legislators, and community members who have faced challenges with finding care for their loved ones. Ponthy said he's constantly getting phone calls from people who want to build new nursing homes in their communities. Unfortunately, almost always I say no, because there just isn't the necessary support to do that in most communities, he said. I'm here because the folks in this room, which are some of the most inspiring people I've ever met. And quite frankly, I'm scared not to be here, he joked. They terrify me. I've never met a more organized, intelligent, passionate group in all my years of doing this. He added that Advocates for Aging Care's members have made such an impression on me that I have offered to finance this project. Advocates for Aging Care and developer FAPROP LLC's proposed $26.6 million project would include 120 beds, and be located on 10 acres near the northeast corner of West Church Street and South Mattis Avenue, partners wrote in an application to the state. The concept features 10 home-like cottages in a campus residential setting. Each cottage would include 12 units, with each unit having its own private room and bathroom and common spaces such as a group dining area, a living area, and outdoor space. two of the cottages would be located near each other with a rehabilitation area in between, providing therapy to residents who require rehabilitation services. Advocates for Aging Care plans to be the nonprofit operator for the facility and contract Southern Administrative Services to manage the facility, which has been named The Cottages. According to previous interview with Advocates for Aging Care Committee Chair Kathy Emanuel, plans also include working with Aging IN, where Ponte is on the board of directors, to implement the greenhouse model. In addition to the cottage housing style, the approach involves employing certified nursing assistants as universal workers who provide personal care to residents and handle a variety of tasks, the project application stated. At the state level, we have worked to create the policy framework needed to support this innovative model, State Senator Paul Faraci, a Democrat from Champaign, said during the public hearing. This year, I joined my legislative colleagues in advancing legislation that establishes this cottage-style nursing home model, sets standards for staffing in facilities, and provides appropriate Medicaid reimbursement to help ensure that these beds remain financially sustainable and accessible to those residents who need it most. Faraci also noted that in addition to $500,000 allocated to the project in last year's state budget, he's been able to secure another $500,000 in this year's budget for a total of $1 million. State Representative Brandon Schweitzer, a Republican from Danville, also voiced his support for the project, and Jacqueline Calapenny, Community Outreach and Engagement Manager for State Representative Carol Ammons, a Democrat from Urbana, and said that Ammons is also in favor of the facility. Multiple speakers detailed their challenges with finding skilled nursing care for their loved ones, such as struggling with long drives to visit family members placed in homes outside the county. Others have said that they've been able to secure local skilled care, but found the quality of that care to be severely lacking. A search of nursing homes with rehab services on Medicare.gov only turns up three facilities in the Champaign-Urbana area, each rated at 1 star out of 5. Two have been cited for potential abuse. The next closest option is an approximately 20-mile trek to the 3-star County Health Nursing Home in Gifford. Tanya Koshy said her father lives in a skilled nursing facility in Urbana. She showed up at the public hearing because I want something better for him and for every family in this county who ends up in the same situation. When her family could no longer provide care for her father at home, she found that the local and regional options were bleak. This is a market with no competition and no pressure to improve, Koshy said. Families don't have a choice, and you take what you can get. She added that having a new skilled nursing home would provide her father and others with a real option, while also giving existing facilities in the county a reason to do better. Koshy's sentiments were echoed by Michelle Olson, whose late husband Gary was a local architect and very involved in the community. When he developed Alzheimer's, it came as a shock to her. He had a stroke, Olson said. He got COVID. He couldn't walk. He could not. He was unable to talk. His wonderful storytelling, he was an amazing man. I tried to find a safe place for him. He ended up in one of those 1-star places. Later, she moved him to another facility before he eventually turning to the Piatt County Nursing Home. The facility wasn't pretty, and the drive wasn't ideal, but it had a caring staff that sticks around, she said. Olson said that it will be important to ensure that the new nursing home is properly staffed with and funded so that patients get the care and attention that they need. He did not deserve this, she said of her husband's care locally. He gave so much to this community. He died with dignity, but he did not deserve the care that Champaign County afforded him. All written comments on the proposed nursing home must be received by July 1st, state officials said. Review board staff will post their findings on the project in a report, which will be posted online on July 7th. Comments in response to these findings must be received before 9 a.m. on July 13th. The state review board is tentatively scheduled to review the proposed project on July 21st. More information is available at hfsrb.illinois.gov. Emmanuel said in a previous interview that she hopes to break ground in early fall if a CIF Certificate of Need permit is approved in July and have the facility open by the first quarter of 2028. Let's continue on under our communities in Section A8 with an article from Urbana, from the Urbana City Council, with the heading, Vote on Apartment Complex Pushed to July. The City Council has pushed a vote on a proposed multifamily development on West Main Street, backed by at least another month. After some discussion on the proposal, the council voted Monday to once again table the decision on a planned 32-unit apartment building to be built on 0.6 acres at 413419 West Main Street. DMCB Properties, LLC, managed by Derek and Melissa Brashear of Urbana, is the developer. The project has sparked concern from some members of the public who are worried about issues such as neighborhood context and housing affordability. The matter, which has faced mixed reactions from aldermen, is on the agenda for a special council meeting set for July 6th. While the council's next regular meeting is set for June 22nd, Alderwoman Grace Wilkin noted that the hope is to vote on the fiscal year 2027 budget that night. I would prefer to be able to have a clear head to deal with both of these things, said Alderman Cherise Hersey. Additionally, the council voted Monday to approve the police department's request to lease a space in the Sunnycrest Center in the city's southeast for a community engagement and violence prevention office. The vote was 5-2, with Wilkin and Alderman Chris Evans in opposition. The space at 1717 South Philo Road, Suite 16, is not far from the site of a large melee involving gunfire Friday night. Police received a report of up to 60 people being involved and two were arrested. Monday's council meeting also included a presentation on budgetary requests for Mayor Deshaun Williams' Philo Road Ahead initiative, which seeks to improve a part of town that has experienced not only crime but also a loss of commercial activity as various businesses have closed along the corridor. The proposed fiscal year 2027 budget includes $100,000 for a revitalization study of the area, $50,000 for development incentives, and $20,000 for programs and events related to the initiative. These are all one-time, not recurring funds, said Olivia Jovine, the city's community development director and zoning administrator. Jovine also noted that the proposed revitalization study would be one of the initial steps toward creating a tax increment financing district to help improve the Philo Road area. The idea is that the study would kick off that process, she said. Another article on that same page, this time from Champaign, with the heading, Project Could Bring Internet to Rural Champaign County in the Next 5 Years, from Volo by Luke Taylor. Over the next 5 years, it should get quite a bit easier to get connected in rural Champaign County. A $48.4 million initiative supported by American Rescue Plan Act funds is getting underway to bring broadband internet access to areas of the county that don't consistently have it. The main obstacle to the efforts thus far? Getting in touch with landowners. Peter Folk, CEO of Volo, .net, Internet Plus Tech, said that unexpected delays from the process of negotiating easements to be allowed to run fiber through people's property have put the project back by nearly a year. Once we're able to talk to people, for the most part, we've been able to find a mutually agreeable process forward, he said. But a lot of people, there's just no way to find them. Volo applied first through the Champaign County Board, then through the state to take this project on. State law requires these easement agreements for any property they pass through, but the process of figuring out who owns any given piece of farmland isn't straightforward. Folk encouraged anyone who lives up in the northwest quadrant of the county to contact the company online or by phone and get everything straightened out if they can. Giving us a call is really the thing that will allow the project to keep moving forward, he said. Folk, alongside Bailey Conrady of the Champaign County Farm Bureau, referred to the internet expansion to rural areas, a rural electrification for the 21st century. Just as electricity moved from being a luxury to being an absolute necessity, high-speed internet has become essential infrastructure for agriculture, businesses, schools, healthcare, and for families, Conrady said. She highlighted advancing tech and focus on data in modern agriculture, and Folk pointed out how many family members of farmers might still have other jobs or school to participate in from home. Especially post-pandemic, many workplaces and schools expect online video call participation during work-from-home days or similar scenarios. Folo will be working to run 584 miles of fiber internet around the county, aiming to provide to thousands of homes, farms, and businesses which are currently not covered by any other high-speed internet service. They are also hosting neighborhood events to get the public familiar with the project at 5:30 p.m. on July 14th, at the Community Sports Complex in St. Joseph, on August 11th at the Eastside Park in Tolono, and on September 8th at the Lake of the Woods Lakeside Shelter. Folk said that while he himself has never dealt with being in too rural of an area to have broadband access, getting internet out to the public has been his mission for a long time. He decided to open Folo back in the late 90s because the businesses that he wanted to start was at Internet Cafe. It was an Internet Cafe. I could not buy the Internet as small business for less than about $1,200, folks said. As a home at that time, you could buy a home Internet service that was about 5 megabits, and it was about $40. But if you were a business, they would not sell it to you. With that kind of overhead, he couldn't make his Internet Cafe dreams come true, but he was inspired to work to make Internet more accessible a different way. When we started offering services, rural people were clamoring for it, and they were our primary customer base for the first 10 years of our company, folks said. This project comes as a major boost to Folo's ability to provide to that customer base. True Broadband, folks said, runs at least 100 megabits, the minimum required to have current Internet interaction with modern technology. That's what Folo will be bringing to parts of the county where residents are too sparse to even form towns or villages. Let's head over to the opinion section and read J. Mark Powell's Holy Cow History. This week, his article is called "He Left His Heart in Bangor, Maine." And there's a vintage picture of West German tourist Erwin Kreutz in 1977 talking on the telephone. The article says, "They say getting there is half the fun. Almost 50 years ago, a visitor to America had plenty of fun thanks to not getting where he was going. This is the story of the incredibly mixed-up German tourist." Poor Erwin Kreutz. All he wanted to do was see San Francisco. You only turn 50 once, and he decided to make the most of it. So the brewery worker from West Germany, back when there were two Germanys, saved his money. He'd never been to America. He'd only flown in an airplane once. Except for a day trip to Switzerland, he'd never been outside of his homeland. He didn't even speak English. Germans are world-class, industrial-strength tourists. These minor details weren't enough to deter the determined Bavarian. And so, one Monday in October of 1977, Kreutz boarded a World Airways charter jet and left on his dream getaway. He was half asleep when the plane landed. The flight attendant wished him a happy visit to San Francisco. Then he headed down the aisle and left the jetliner. Kreutz had made it. Groggily, he exited the plane, inhaling the first breath of California air as he headed for U.S. Customs. Once cleared, he hopped into a taxi and said one of the few English words he knew, sleep. The cabbie dutifully delivered him to a hotel, where he booked a room and crashed. Yet, when he set about exploring the city by the bay, the next day, uneasiness overtook him. Coming upon a Chinese restaurant and having read about Chinatown, he thought he was in San Francisco suburbs. His jitter slowly turned into fear. There was no Golden Gate Bridge, no cable cars, no Nob Hill, Fisherman's Wharf, or Alcatraz Island in the distance. Those landmarks were still more than 3,300 miles away. Erwin Kreutz was in Bangor, Maine. A friendly Mainer overheard him trying to explain his dilemma in a pub and called friends who spoke German. Able to communicate in his own language, at last he discovered what had happened. The plane had stopped in Bangor to refuel for the final leg of its journey. The flight attendant's shift had ended, and knowing he was supposed to fly on to San Francisco, she had merely wished him well for the rest of his visit. Kreutz had misunderstood her to say he had reached his destination. The local newspaper reported on the mix-up on October 20th. The story was quickly picked up by the wire services. Kreutz's goof was suddenly national news. Bangor now treated its unexpected visitor like a celebrity. Over the week, he was given the key to the city, was the guest of honor at the local Oktoberfest, and was made an honorary member of the Penobscot Tribe and the Old Town Rotary Club. He was even taken to the state capitol in Augusta, where he met the governor and another state dignitaries. For Kreutz's 50th birthday celebration, he had one request. He wanted to go to McDonald's. His wish was happily granted. He was even allowed to flip a few burgers. It didn't end there. The San Francisco Examiner flew Kreutz to the place he had first set out to see. When he finally got there, Kreutz was initially underwhelmed, saying that there weren't enough trees on the drive from the airport to downtown. His mood quickly changed, however, when he was feted like an A-lister. He was given yet another key to the city, inducted into the Wong Family Association at the Empress of China restaurant, taken to a vit rodeo where he was greeted with a standing ovation and given a white cowboy hat, and presented with a case of beer by local brewery's president. At the airport for his return flight, someone jokingly gave him a giant luggage tag reading, "Bitte," in Frankfurt, Augustin Lassen, which means, "Please let me off in Frankfurt." His journey over at last, he was given a welcome home gift, a 13-gallon keg of beer from his employer. Kreutz told reporters, "If President John F. Kennedy can say I'm a Berliner, then I am a Bangor." There was a second trip to Maine in 1978. However, the novelty of his accidental arrival was wearing thin. Back in Germany, he got into a nasty wage tiff with his employer. The final straw came when he told German media that he had drunk a competitor's beer. A pink slip soon followed. Kreutz went back to Bangor a third time in early 1979, hoping to land a good job and immigrate. With his 15 minutes of fame now over, the best he could get was a job offer as a janitor at minimum wage. In a farewell interview with the town paper, he thanked residents once again for their kindness and admitted that his final trip had been a mistake. His final years were spent in a Bavarian nursing home, suffering from worsening dementia brought by years of excessive drinking. Shortly before he passed away in 2010, at age 83, a nurse said he frequently opened the photo album from his original moment of glory, and every time he did, he smiled. And we're going to take a break here with this first half of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, June 10th. This is Lisa, and I will be back after a short break.